This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 23rd of June, 2022, and we're looking at a very choppy session yesterday in the U.S. We were recording the podcast. We were down quite heavily and basically erased the prior session with that very ugly Asian session overnight on Wednesday. And then we rallied for much of the session from the lows, but closed about unchanged relative to the prior day. So forming what a technician and a candlestick analyzer would call perhaps a long-legged doji, supposedly meaning uncertainty, a classic non-committal technical analysis term, but it does look like this 3800 area is quite important for resistance on the S&P 500. We've talked about it before. It was also the prior major pivot low, or at least near it, back in May. So quite interesting. I don't know what you're seeing in the the sectors, Peter, but it looks to me like the stuff that was so speculative and so high beta to the upside on the prior session before yesterday, it looks like it did quite poorly yesterday. But commodities is also very notable, of course, due to the sell-off in commodities in our theme baskets there.
Yeah, we have a lot of mean reversion effects in the market right now because we're trying to find a new equilibrium here. Are we going to post a new low? Are we going to go higher? We're just back and forth. And I think the session yesterday, I mean, look at the trading range there. Quite incredible, right? I mean, we were talking about, you know, energy fizzling out. Both you and I, John, we were talked about it yesterday on the podcast. We were surprised. We ended up actually rallying above 3,800, and then we came down again over 50 points, and we closed the session a little bit lower. And now we are struggling to find a direction. And you're right, commodities under pressure. Travel basket is under pressure. Everything that's consumer related and demand related, also as mentioned, the commodities are not doing very well. On the flip side, you know, next gen medicine is doing well. Bubble stocks, I think it's because, you know, the interest rates are easing off here with the easing in commodities. So that's some of the trends that we are seeing. Also, the green transformation, renewable energy in China are holding up pretty well. And I think we'll come back to that theme because there are some interesting things shaping up in Europe with Russia's gas policy around Germany. But I will highlight just quickly, John, because if you look at that S&P 500 chart, I have a very simplistic way of looking at, you know, the technical picture. I don't use that many technical indicators. I just look at levels. And to me, I mean, a close above 3,800 for me would be potential bullish signal that we could push higher and try to get to around that gap area. You can see just below the 3,900 area, because if you get a close above 3,800, it would be the highest close for those S&P 500 futures in a little more than a week. So I think that's really the key thing to watch for, because, you know, do we have enough energy to muster a meaningful rebound here? That's really the big question.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a tremendous sell-off from that rather notable rally all the way up into the 4,200 area. So certainly, you know, pumping back towards 3,900 would not be a major accomplishment to really reverse that, sort of reverse the trend. You would need something really significant, well above 4,000, arguably, from a technical analysis standpoint. So that's the tactical outlook here. But the longer-term outlook is, of course, and what commodities seem to be pointing to is the risk of recession. There was, of course, Fed Chair Powell out with his testimony yesterday. I didn't follow every word he was saying, but the summaries that I've seen of everything that was said, and just looking at what the market reaction was, which is essentially nil, is that he's sort of admitting that we could hike, and this could mean that the recession is a possibility, even though he hopes it is not one. And then John Arthur is pointing out in his column today in Bloomberg that the New York Fed's own model is suggesting something like an 80% risk of a recession. That's an interesting contrast there. And then you point out something Bullard was saying recently. I believe he was out with a pretty prominent speech on Friday, or no, not Friday, over the weekend or early this week, talking about 12 to 18 months to a recession. So what's...
It's just whole discussion is, Powell said yesterday a soft landing seems to be quite difficult to manage. He says, as Powell said yesterday, it's quite likely that the current tightening of financial conditions will cause a recession. And Bullard, 12 to 18 months away recession, I find it a little bit out of tune with what we're actually observing. We highlighted South Korea yesterday as sort of a beacon of the weakness we're seeing in the global economy and the US leading indicators. We got an update very recently. And the 6 month average of the month on month is a very typical way of looking at the current speed and trajectory of leading indicators. And I've put that in on slide 3. And you can see we dipped into negative territory for the first time since 2020. And it's just, to me, the degree, the speed in which the US leading indicators are coming down could actually mean that we're losing speed quite fast. So I think the next couple of months are going to be extremely crucial. And we also have initial jobless claims later today that will give a new clues on how the US labor market is doing. So I don't buy the 12 to 18 months away. If it's anything, it's probably only 6 months away. But that's based on my best guess from what I'm looking at.
Yeah, there's also the argument that it's there are different sectors of the economy moving at different speeds. We have some of the lagging sectors like employment still very strong, yeah, and could prove stubborn in keeping earnings higher and inflation levels higher. Whereas, of course, the interest rate impacted sectors, housing in particular, are clearly in steep retreat, and that sector will be in some sort of recession imminently if it already isn't in recession. All right, let's get over to the commodity space because that's where really all the headlines and action is in terms of what's impressing us in this market. A lot of moving parts here. It was a tremendous, I guess the most important thing, twofold. We have the industrial metals telling us recession incoming if Dr. Copper is playing its role. But then we had a tremendous sell-off in crude oil yesterday that was somewhat disrupted, but still that was quite a session yesterday in crude oil. So take us through what's going on.
Yeah, well, it is basically the R word, recession, that's driving these markets right now. And even the Fortress Energy is also showing some weakness here. And probably rightfully so, because it is a market that is gripped with uncertainty now. And that basically means some of the strong convictions in the markets are starting to get challenged. And that's obviously impacting the markets where we've seen most of the strengths in recent weeks, and that has most certainly been the energy. But we're down around 15% from the peak a couple of weeks ago. We have bounced since the hitting a low overnight. So I think this the outlook for the energy sector is not one of where we should expect a dramatic fall, because the market is just simply too tight. And we're seeing all this noise coming out of the U.S. administration, a gas tax holiday for 3 months, which I think from a decent consumption perspective, let's say you burn through 50 gallons of fuel during that time, you're saving $10. That's not really going to save your daily life, and if anything, it's just going to keep demand at relatively elevated levels. And we also saw a comment yesterday from Phillips 66, the chairman CEO of one of the U.S. oil companies, just basically saying, forget about investing in refinery capacity and new production, because we simply don't know what the future holds. And this is what we've been drumming on about for a long time now, that the structural deficits, structural challenges we have in the market is not going to be changed by the fact that we have very high prices right now. So that's the reason why we continue to see prices being underpinned. It's getting a little bit long, John, sorry, but if you just look at slide 6, just want to highlight some of the changes we've seen in the space since since CPI was released from the US on June 10th. That's really what triggered the renewed angst about rate hikes, and that was followed up the following week by the FOMC 75 basis point hike. So you can see right now during this time, I left out natural gas because we can talk about that in a little while, because that's obviously the outlier in both directions right now. But just take an example, the global miners, the top five global miners, they lost around 27% of their market cap since April 1st. And the three reasons, basically, we got the China lockdowns, delays, delay in reopening. We have the recession fears, as we've been talking about. But then also we have many investors who have been suffering steep losses on their equity positions. And some have probably opted to take profit on some of those that were still in the money. And I think that's added to the downside pressure on some of these mining companies.
It's actually ironic that you put that slide in, because I have some thoughts on the Australian dollar versus the BHP Billiton, the Australian mining giant. But we need to talk, while we're talking about energy, let's get to your slide 7 there, because there is a interesting situation that has developed in Germany with these latest on these natural gas supplies. So take us through that story.
Exactly, and that also leads into Peter's next slide, but let's take slide 7 first. Basically, Germany has been out, I haven't seen the confirmation, but it's coming out of Reuters that Germany is about to declare phase 2 out of its 3 stages of the emergency gas plan. This is basically the stage called the alarm stage, and I put in just a comment from Bloomberg at the bottom right. You can just basically see what the second stage entails and includes, and one of them is basically firing up more coal-fired power. And we can see the reason for that is basically that Russia's cut supplies through the Nord Stream gas pipeline to 40% of capacity, and most of that flow is basically destined for Italy through the Czech Republic, and that basically means that most of the gas that's coming in through this Nord Stream is not going to Germany, it's going to other countries. Sorry, not to Italy, but into the Czech Republic. So Germany's got a serious gas issue right now. It is of their own making. They have completely changed their policy, their energy policy, towards relying on cheap gas from Russia, and they're paying the price, and we're all paying the price of that now. And as you can see, the at the same time, LNG flows into Europe has started to slow following that explosion we saw at the LNG export plant in the US a few weeks back.
So looking pretty dire there. They've announced they're going to put, I think it was 10 gigawatts of electricity generation capacity from coal online, something like 5% of Germany's demand. And they're still refusing to halt the phase out of their nuclear plants. I simply don't understand why it's not possible to reverse that decision. My understanding is they would be operational. Regardless, let's look at what's going on in coal, because actually coal is, in some cases, is coming back from the dead. Like it or not. And what are your thoughts there on slide 8 with this arch coal fear?
Yeah, it's a follow-up on what Ole said. I mean, the share price chart you'll see here on Arch Resources in the US is basically mimicking the expansion we have seen in the coal price, which is, if you take the Newcastle futures, looking pretty elevated, to say the least, coming into levels that are significantly above the long-term average that we have had in that market. And we will have a bigger press release today and press conference from Robert Habeck, the German economy minister, and they will talk about energy and supply security. And as Ole already said, I mean, people familiar with the matter is saying that they will enact this phase 2, and it will probably include a significant ramp up in coal burning. There could potentially also be a boost for renewable energy. I guess the German government will have to pull a lot of levers to diversify their energy mix a lot. So there could be a positive sentiment boost. And we also have hearing other European countries talking about burning coal, right? We had Austria the other day. I wouldn't be surprised if Denmark ends up choosing that. So what we're basically looking into, at least the next year, what I would call a green transformation detour, where we have to scale back our ambitions of a different energy future and actually go with what we know is working. But I mean, I guess you'll say the same, Ole. It's not because coal is cheap at these levels, right? Relative to gas, it's more out of necessity, I guess.
It's simply because it's available.
Yeah,
exactly. It's as simple as that. So it will be the short term fix, because if we don't see a pickup in supplies through this gas line, and again reminding that Europe is accusing Russia of playing politics. And whilst Russia is basically saying, well, we're missing components that Siemens needs to deliver to our pumping station. So this is where that one has been left. But generally, if this continues, we will not have enough gas for the next winter.
All right. Grim topic. Let's look at linking some of this into in the commodity space into foreign exchange, and that would be via the Australian dollar. It's quite interesting to see with this breakdown in copper, a big technical breakdown level, falling this week. And I put a chart up. It's maybe a bit busy, but let's try to walk through it on slide 4. You see the copper curve there is black, and you've broken down to lows not seen since, I guess, late 2020, early 2021. And then you see the BHP, Australian BHP bulletin equity chart there, and it's remarkably elevated relative to what copper is doing. Copper is a very major component of what BHP gets out of the ground, the other component being iron ore, which has also been under pressure lately. So that complex is under pressure, and the Australian dollar has been under pressure, and the 68.30 area is a significant chart low. I'm wondering how much white space could open up on the chart below that. And you still look at the trade weighted Australian dollar, which is in blue on that chart, and you see we're relatively elevated relative to the last 5 years or so. So if this sort of forward recession concerns deepen, this commodity sell-offs deepen, I'm really curious whether Australia becomes a leader to the downside as a traditional pro-cyclical currency, even though a lot of the focus on this cycle has been that it's a sort of a super fortress, if you will, from a commodity standpoint, because it has the food, it has the LNG, it has the, of course, the industrial metals, it has basically all the commodities it needs and has become quite a major trade surplus country from traditionally running large deficits. So a big tension there, but technically very interesting with the Australian dollar, US dollar pair. And then on slide five, if you fast forward to that, you have dollar yen coming under a pretty sharp correction overnight. There was a influential former, I think he was head of actual currency policy or forex policy in the Ministry of Finance, out complaining about the weak yen, saying it's not productive or positive for the Japanese economy. And those comments helping dollar yen back lower. Although somewhat surprisingly, it's been somewhat surprising that dollar yen has actually gone to those new highs above 136.50 earlier this week, when you have U.S. Treasury yields actually looking at downside pivotal levels around 3.15%. So that's the main curiosity I have elsewhere in foreign exchange is the status of the Japanese yen, given that it's gotten quite about a lot of support from correcting commodity prices and from correcting the correction in the rise in bond yields. So 135, I would argue, starts to test the downside potential for the Japanese yen versus the US dollar. At the same time, the dollar, I think, will pivot relative to global risk sentiment in other pairs, whether it's Aussie, whether it's CAD, as was yesterday, really leaning to the upside of the dollar. And then we got that crazy bout of stronger sentiment from the lows in the US session. So it really looks like a lot of the correlations are at one for some of those risk appetite or instruments that trade along the fault lines of risk appetite. Okay, guys, let's look at elsewhere in this market. And I've got a macro roundup, some other thoughts on FX, but focus turning to FedEx today. Peter, a bit surprised to see where this equity is trading in the local relative terms to the broader market.
Yeah, it has actually been gaining lately. You're right about that. That's because there's some activist investor noises around FedEx. I think there are different types of investors are looking at FedEx and saying, oh, this company could do much better. There's definitely a room for improvement on margins and profitability. I mean, we can just look here in Denmark. We have DSV, which is probably one of the best well-run logistics groups in the entire world. So there's definitely something that could be changed at FedEx. But in the short term, as we talked about it yesterday, it is the whether FedEx can actually turn all this revenue growth into profits. There, the expectations from sell-side analysts that the company can actually raise their operating margin between 200 and 300 basis points from the previous quarter. Very curious to see whether they can deliver on that. They recently bought the TNT logistics firm and they have been carrying out that integration, and the expectations are that they can actually deliver synergies from that. So that's the key thing that we're watching with FedEx. And then we have Accenture, which is a very big sprawling conglomerate on IT professional services, as they call it. So it's everything from management consultancies to ad hoc work. They have also a cloud business. They have a lot of stuff. And in general, I would say Accenture is a barometer on business spending within IT, just like IBM is. So we're going to watch that as well for giving any clues of whether we're seeing some demand destruction coming out of the corporate sector.
All right, now let's roll forward to the macro calendar for today, slide 10, and we actually have our first of the initial or flash June PMI surveys out of Europe. The one for France is out the earliest. We're managing to squeeze that one in as we're recording this podcast, and it's out at a very significant negative surprise. I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing the euro a bit soft here this morning. 51 spot zero on the manufacturing, that was versus 54 expected and 54.6 in May. And the services side also coming down lower, still an expansion at 54.4, but that's a pretty big drop from the 57.5. Well, the 57.5 was expected and the 58.3 the prior month. We get the German one coming out basically as we're just after we're wrapping up here in the broader Eurozone one as well. We have the preliminary ones from the UK and the US as well today. So we can watch for that. There's also a Norwegian Central Bank meeting that's going to be out before we probably even get this podcast live in about half an hour. They're expected, not expected to do by a majority to do the one thing or the other. So there's a significant surprise room here. 25 basis points, supposedly, according to the survey, still the majority expecting that. But the a very sizable minority looking for a 50 basis point move today to take the rate to 1.25%. It's ironic we're this low, given that the Norwegian Central Bank was one of the first ones to achieve liftoff last year. The forward guidance will be very important there, many expecting that they will at least guide for 25 basis point moves at minimum at every meeting. But let's see. Euro-Nokia trading at key levels around 10.50 this morning and is going to key off of whatever the Norse Bank is guiding, as well as risk sentiment, of course. And if crude oil is correcting and they only go 25, we could be in for quite a squeeze higher in the euro versus the Norwegian krona, the key pairing for that currency. Elsewhere today, Turkey, I think it's an exercise of futility to expect anything to move certainly to the upside for the Turkish policy rate. Interesting subplot with the initial jobless claims out of the U.S. We've seen elevated readings. The one before last week was the highest since January, and we only came off very slightly last week. Is this continuing to rise, or is it stabilizing after hitting those record lows a couple of months ago, especially adjusted for population? And then we have Fed Chair Powell out again today. Again, his testimony yesterday not really moving expectations in any meaningful way. I think the Fed is just following, not leading anything. They're following whatever the data is saying. So I doubt if we get much of a market reaction to that. Then we have the Mexican Central Bank out later today as well. And maybe interesting overnight for triggering some, especially I think options trading in the Japanese yen, because I think that's where the people are wanting to position themselves, not wanting to take the spot risk, but looking somewhere out in the calendar for the Bank of Japan to either surrender or for the rest of the world to go into recession and the bank and the Japanese yen goes to the upside that way. But we have the May national CPI figures out of Japan. These have been hitting essentially modern highs in the last couple of months. All right, that is a wrap for today. Interesting to see if the market is pivoting higher or lower here today. Certainly commodities markets are sending the loudest signal here on forward concerns. Let's see if the bond market picks up the signal there as well. And then the equity market, finally, whether it's celebrating lower rates or joining in the other markets in expressing concern about the forward outlook. That's a wrap for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the final edition this week of the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.